Hello and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'll be joined in just a few minutes by my co-host Jen Chavez. Jen is visiting with experimental filmmaker Vanessa Renick, and we'll be hearing all about her video and sound installation, which is currently up at the Portland Art Museum. And I'll be talking with Will Kaufman. Will is the director of Daylight's End, which is featured at the upcoming Portland Horror Film Festival. But first, let's welcome back to the studio our friend Josh Leek. Josh is here with Jennifer Arndt, and they're here to talk about the new project they're working on, a film adaptation of the Chuck Palahniuk book, Lullaby. Josh and Jennifer, welcome to the film show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Big fans of the show.
So Chuck Palahniuk is best known for the book, film, and comic book series Fight Club. Fight Club was a huge phenomenon, an epic David Fincher project. And the current project that you're working on with Chuck himself adapting his book Lullaby, which many critics consider his best work, you're just trying to raise $250,000. That seems like an ultra low budget, even for an indie film.
Yeah, I mean, just because we're trying to raise $250,000 doesn't mean we don't have outside investors or other people that are helping. But I think that the project is has such an amazing story that a lot of people connect with on so many different levels that it's not a special effects, you know, run 'em, gun 'em, shoot 'em, you know, special effects kind of movie. And I think, you know, although Fight Club was made for $63 million and I can sure promise you if we got $63 million that our film would be equally as epic. I don't think that this film really needs that amount of money, you know, and I think that a lot of times films that spend Google's amount of money aren't necessarily better than the independent films. And, you know, as someone that watches a lot of films, you know, as you know, I run the Portland Film Festival. I watch, you know, 10 to 20 films a day. You know, money isn't always that factor that makes a film good.
So Lullaby, this might be the most metaphorical of Chuck's work. It's kind of a modern fable, really. You know, after Fight Club, the movie Choke, it sort of, well, it, I guess people considered it sort of choked. It was a bit of a flop. So this might be why Chuck's happy to work with independent local talent. You've got a local director on board, and it sounds like it's going to be done mostly in Oregon.
Yeah, we're really excited. You know, Andy Mango's the director. He's actually the last director that's worked with Mr. Palahniuk, and he produced and directed a film called Romance, which is based off a short story that Chuck wrote in Playboy. And Andy picked it up for a dollar and a bottle of a gin, or it might have been whiskey.
I think maybe wine.
Was it wine?
I don't know.
Okay. And he toured it around the world. In fact, the funny thing about this project is that Andy is from Oregon. I'm from Oregon, and we both met each other in London at a film festival called Rain Dance.
Ah.
And after we met, we became good friends, and we talked about how could we collaborate on a different project. And, you know, we had always both loved this book, Lullaby, and you know, we approached Mr. Palahniuk's agents and went through everything. And, you know, we're excited to be the ones that are bringing it to fruition. So it's an amazing piece, and I know just all the support, all the fans that have come out thus far. We have over, I think, like 2,000 supporters on our Kickstarter project, lullabykickstarter.com. And, you know, they've given over $170,000, and we've only been doing this for 9 days. So it's exciting.
So people have a chance to get really involved with, you say some of your backers are going to be allowed to participate sort of in the decision making of the film.
Yeah, and that's kind of, you know, one thing I think that stands our project aside from most film projects is that we really wanted to bring our fans into the process. And one way to do that is we have what we call our virtual producers. And what you're going to be able to do is you sign up to be a virtual producer. And as we are in production, we're going to be emailing out these decisions, and you're going to be able to make a choice. You're going to be able to help us reach and make the best film we possibly can. So we're excited about it.
So tell us again how people can get involved and find out more about the adaptation of the Chuck Palahniuk book, Lullaby.
Yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, one other thing, this is the first film that Mr. Polonick has actually written a script for.
Oh, wow.
So I think that's pretty amazing about our project, that he actually co-wrote the script. You can find out more on Kickstarter, their homepage, but you can also go quicker to lullabykickstarter.com.
That sounds great. Josh Leek and Jennifer Arndt, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're tuned into The Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Concer. And in a few minutes, I'll be talking with Will Kaufman. His film Daylight's End will be part of the upcoming Portland Horror Film Festival. We'll also be joined by festival organizer Gwen Callahan. Right now, though, let's talk with my co-host, Jen Chavez. Jen is visiting with experimental filmmaker Vanessa Rennick. And we'll be hearing about Vanessa's installation at the Portland Art Museum, as well as a retrospective of her work at the Northwest Film Center.
Vanessa Rennick has been on the Portland film and art scenes for over 20 years. As the founder of the Oregon Department of Kick-Ass, she's been part of a vibrant DIY experimental film community that has included the likes of Matt McCormick and Miranda July. She has dozens of films under her belt, many shot in experimental documentary style, often focusing her lens on themes of westward expansion in the locales of the Pacific Northwest. She uses avant-garde formal elements to explore radical politics and environmental issues in her work. She's also an installation artist who incorporates structural elements into her art. On June 9th, the Northwest Film Center will present an 11-film retrospective screening of her work from her recent North-South-East-West screening tour. And upstairs in the Portland Art Museum, her installation, Next Level F'd Up, is up through July 17th. Vanessa Rennick recently joined me in the studio to discuss her work. She started by reflecting upon her entrance into Portland's film community years ago.
Well, Matt McCormick somehow found me and a bunch of other filmmakers that were here, and none of us knew about each other, and he started having the Peripheral Produce screenings. And he was having one screening every 2 months, and he'd always ask, "Are you going to have something in the show, Vanessa?" And I'd be like, "Yes!" And then I'd furiously make some new piece of work. So it was great for being prolific to have all these deadlines happening, and also meeting other makers. And I met Miranda during that time as well through mutual friends, and I ended up shooting 3 short films for her and some of her video that was used in her early performances at PICA. And also through Matt having his festival here, then I met all these experimental filmmakers from around the world that would come here to Portland. And that was really great for me because now I go out on tour and I get to reconnect with all these people and see them out at festivals or when I'm doing shows in different places.
So you have a retrospective of your work coming up at the Northwest Film Center on June 9th. I wanted to ask about a theme in particular. A lot of your more recent work seems to incorporate or focus on nature or animals in particular and the impact of human society on those. And I was wondering if you could talk about your connection to those themes.
Being in the Pacific Northwest, of course, I'm surrounded by massive amounts of incredible open lands, public lands, nature, and animals. I've always been interested in animals ever since I was a kid. And I think a lot of people, when they become adults, lose that connection that they have, super close communication with animals when they're children. But I am one of those people that did not lose it and still really like being around people who, like biologists that are studying animals or just reading books about them and then going out and making pieces that then I can share with others.
A lot of your pieces are documentary, and I'm wondering if you have any insight into how experimental filmmaking technique enhances documentary, because so often that's documentaries are just straightforward talking heads sort of affairs.
I think that communicating ideas through a more disjointed experimental way or a more poetic way has a way of reaching into people's consciousness more so than if you're just sitting and watching a straightforward documentary with talking heads going blah, 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 think this way. but that if you're really stretching the way you're presenting things more in a dreamlike fashion and using, I collaborate a lot with musicians that live in this town, and taking advantage of having their incredible talents add to the piece and bringing emotion in, you have the ability to get into people's brains in a different way.
Your upcoming screening, you're going to be screening 11 films that are kind of spanning your career, which has been active, like I said, for over 20 years. So can you give any teasers as to what type of films you'll be showing?
There's the portrait series, which I started years ago, and I'm going to be showing all three films that I've made so far in the portrait series, which are whatever I find of interest, either history, stories, places in the Pacific Northwest that I also have musicians who live in the Cascadia region score. And there's one about the nuclear cooling tower from Trojan being demolished, and one about the African-American-owned record store on Williams Avenue, the House of Sound, and one about a grain elevator up in Vancouver, BC that Terry Jane O'Neill scored. And Sam Coombs did the nuclear cooling tower film, the music for it. And then there's going to be some films that have my writing in it that span many years. Some of them were shot back in the early 80s when I was hitchhiking, and then later on I wrote stories and narrated them. There's one called Crow Dog, where I'm hitchhiking out to the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And Nine is a Secret is about a time that crows and ravens became really prominent in my life, and also one of my friends was very ill. And then there's also the latest one I made called SF Hitch, which is about a time that I hitchhiked to San Francisco from Chicago. There's some funny films in there, like The Red Stallion's Revenge, where there's a horse and a bear fight happening, and Westward Ho, which is something I shot at the Pendleton Roundup, and Layover, one of my later films that I made about the Vox Swifts that migrate through Portland every September for 3 weeks and funnel into the chimney over at Chapman Elementary School. And then I'm going to end with the three-channel piece Hope and Pray that Daniel Menchie scored, and it has wolves and ravens and bison and elk and coyotes in it, and eagles. And it's all in the wintertime shot in Yellowstone National Park. And it's phenomenal, beautiful footage with an intense soundtrack and a surprise ending.
Also, your installation that you have at the Portland Art Museum. I'll have to edit it slightly for radio, but it's called Next Level Effed Up. I'm really interested to hear, actually, about the piece's commentary on anti-development sentiments in Portland. You juxtapose that with images of natural disasters that, as you say, make a statement on the inevitability of cyclical environmental change. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that theme and how that comes through in this installation.
The installation is a part of it has a mountain of 13 Commodore 64 monitors, and there's seven of them are working, and they have different loops going, and six of them are silent loops, and they're all different, and then one of them has different stories going on it. And one of the silent loops, I got permission from this website, the Portland Chronicle, that documents all the demolition permits that happen every week in Portland and takes a picture of the structure that's going to be demolished and then also it being gone. And that is just going continuously. So you see a couple minutes of all these structures there and gone and there and gone. And not only structures, but also gigantic trees, which that's another concern of mine, that it's not just that we're worried about the humans that are losing the ability to afford living in a smaller house, because all those houses that are getting demolished are being replaced with much huger houses that only people with a lot more money mm-hmm. can afford. And in the same time, also these huge trees are getting cut down and lots of bushes and landscape is disappearing because the houses are being taking up almost the entire footprint of the old lot where there was a smaller house, and then a habitat for other animals besides humans is being lost as well in this town. Mm-hmm. I'm not anti-density. I think it's good we have an urban growth boundary. Mm-hmm. I just think it's, I don't know, it's really hard when developers or people with a lot more money that are moving here can offer so much money more for a small structure that they look at as like a little box that they're just going to tear down, where the house that we're sitting in right now, my house, is a tiny little shit box, which I've turned into a palace. And I'm a poor artist, but I love this house, and it's on a double lot, and I get offers multiple times a week, people wanting to buy it and tear it down and build, you know, 3, 4, 5 townhomes in its place. It's kind of, horrifying to be, but also not just for, I mean, I like some of the new things that are being built in its place, but a lot of them I don't. I think there's a lot of schlocky developers here that live in Wilsonville and other places and are just like building the crappiest looking, like, is there an architect involved? Probably not. And is there some kind of design committee in this city? It doesn't seem like there's a design committee the way some of the things that are getting built. But I also have all these friends who are artists and musicians and lower income people, and they are moving away because they cannot afford to live here in Portland anymore. And they would be happy if they could, you know, make an offer on this house, but they're priced out because everybody's offering $50,000, $100,000 more or all cash and buying these smaller houses. And it's not possible for people to buy starter homes anymore in inner Portland or even outer Portland. It's getting crazy expensive.
Right. How do we keep creativity alive in Portland when creative people are being forced out of Portland?
That I don't know what the answer is right now. I know Chloe Udaly is running against Steve Novick, and she's like the only person who is a renter and who is poor and who understands these struggles and is fighting really hard to figure out answers to housing injustice and disability injustices. So politically, it would be great to rally behind somebody like her and make some changes. And I don't really know what the answer is. I was just in San Francisco, and I was horrified by the amount of homeless people and the amount of filthy rich people walking by the homeless people slipping everywhere. And I totally see that happening here in Portland and coming here. And can see, I've said this to the city council like a year and a half ago, this is going to be San Francisco. If we don't figure out a way to change, and they have rent control, and we don't even have rent control. It's pretty crazy. But my installation at the museum isn't all just one big giant bummer. There's a lot of humor in it and really great music, and it ends on a very expansive, positive note about us not just having our panties in a wad about this moment of now, of whatever we're freaking out about, but that, you know, the world, the universe has been around and will be around for a really, really long time.
Thank you very much for speaking with me about your event. It's upcoming this June 9th, correct?
Yes, it's June 9th, and the film screening is at 7:30 at the Witzel, but they're encouraging people to come earlier to go up into the museum to check out my installation in the Apex space. And then also before the film screening, there's going to be a small reception in the Stevenson Room right next to the Witzel Museum. So it'll be a little shindig, and I'll do a Q&A afterwards.
Fantastic. Well, Vanessa Rennick, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, that was Jen Chavez was talking with Vanessa Rennick, experimental filmmaker and founder of the Oregon Department of Kick-Ass. Again, there's a retrospective of Vanessa's films coming up at the Northwest Film Center June 9th at 7:30 p.m. You're listening to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and now we've got Gwen Callahan in the studio. Gwen, thanks so much for coming in today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here.
And Will Kaufman is on the line from Texas. He's the director of Daylight's End. Will, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Gwen, this film, Daylight's End, let's start with you. You're currently organizing the Portland Horror Film Festival, and Daylight's End is a big feature there.
Yeah, so we are actually showing it on closing night, Thursday night. I think the screening for that will start around 8:15, 8:30 at night. And we're really excited because we have a ton of short films. We accepted 30 films total this year. For this festival. That was only about 20% of the submissions. And we were super excited when we were approached with Daylight's End because not only is it sort of a different pace from a lot of the other things that we're showing, but it's really, really well done. I have to say it's one of the first horror films where I've seen where the women and men are unequivocally equal in terms of their abilities and their survival abilities. So we're really excited about that. Plus, we just love Lance Henriksen. We'll watch anything that he's
right,
in.
Right. I'm a huge Lance Henriksen fan. And so this is the inaugural Portland Horror Film Festival. This is the first one that's in town here?
Yes.
Okay. So why don't you introduce Will and let's talk about Daylight's End.
So Will Kaufman is the amazing director of Daylight's End, which will be playing at the Hollywood Theater on June 2nd.
Okay, Will, so you're calling in from Texas. Tell us about this film. You got some good star power in there, and it sounds very dystopian.
Absolutely. I mean, this is kind of a throwback to the movies of my youth that I was in love with, things like The Road Warrior and Assault on Precinct 13, meshed with something more like I Am Legend. So it is a hardcore genre action film, post-apocalyptic action horror film, and it was kind of a dream opportunity to get to do. And as you said, we have a fantastic cast.
Yeah, you have a string of features behind you, and what makes this film stand out? Is this a film in your home state of Texas?
Yes, we pretty much filmed the entire film in Dallas.
Ah.
And then the film opens out in West Texas, right on the border.
So tell us what people can expect when they show up. Your producer, Sherry Dieterling, is going to be joining us, I believe, at the festival on June 1st or June 2nd.
That's correct. Our producer extraordinaire, Sherry, is from Portland, and she's coming home with our film, so we're really excited about that. We also have Rachel Hines, our prop master, who is relocated to Portland, and she's planning to be there in attendance, so we're excited.
So let's talk a little bit more about the film festival. Gwen, what kind of events are going to happen here? This is going to happen at the Hollywood Theater Wednesday and Thursday, June 1st and 2nd. You have a meet and greet on Wednesday?
Yeah, so this event is very film-centric, unlike the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival that we also run, which has a lot of panels and gaming and like vendors and things. This film festival is just all about the films. We have a meet and greet from 4 to 6 p.m. on June 1st over at Sam's Billiards. And pretty much all the filmmakers that are coming basically said that they would be there. So if you want to have a chance to schmooze and rub elbows with them, that's a great place to have a very casual conversation, have a drink and some food before you go into the festival, because your eyes are going to be pounded for the next 5 hours with amazing, amazing short films and features. We have unofficial after parties over at the Moon and Sixpence afterwards, if you guys have the longevity to stay that long. I think we're running films almost right up to midnight, so doors will open at 6 for our Patron of Horror supporters that bought the early bird tickets before we even announced any programming, and thank you to them. And then it'll open to everybody else at 6:10 p.m., and then everyone can file into the theater, get the amazing popcorn at the Hollywood Theater.
So this being the inaugural Portland Horror Film Festival, you don't have a specific theme. So it sounds like there's going to be a lot of sort of hybrid films, like the one Will just directed, with a lot of action and sort of sci-fi and other elements to it.
I would say each film doesn't necessarily have a mix, but part of why we started the Portland Horror Film Festival is because when we were doing film selections for the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival and even Zompire, we were finding that we were getting a lot of submissions that were just great films, but they didn't quite fit that subgenre of cosmic horror or zombies and vampires. So we decided that it was time for Portland to have its own dedicated horror film festival for all kinds of horror. So we have like 28 short films and 2 features, and they kind of span the entire, like all the subgenres of horror films. So we've got some ghosts in there, some demons, some
Zompires.
monsters, you know. These are very smart and scary films.
So you're hoping to bring the horror fans of Portland out, like the Zompires in Daylight's End.
Yeah, yeah. Except that hopefully they won't burn up in the sunlight.
So Will, you're working on other projects, so you won't be joining us for the festival. But we've got your partner Sherry coming in, and there's going to be a Q&A, and it sounds like there'll be a very very heavy participation going on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and so far, I mean, the reason we as filmmakers, you know, do this is for an audience, you know, is to get to share our films. And having a venue like the Portland Horror Film Festival is an awesome opportunity. I mean, so far when we've screened it, we've had a fantastic reaction. And so it's really exciting to get to share it with, you know, we had a local fan who had been following the film, David Brandon, who has helped us point us in the right direction, and we're super excited to get to share it.
Well, we have a couple of pairs of passes here for the full run of the Portland Horror Film Festival. Again, it's happening Wednesday and Thursday, June 1st and 2nd at the Hollywood Theater. And so we want to give those away. So if you are lucky callers number 2 and 4, those passes can be yours. The number to call is 503-231-8032. Yeah, again, the number to call to win yourself a pair of passes is 503-231-8032. Well, Will Kaufman, thanks for calling in today from Texas. Again, we'll be seeing your Daylight's End producer, Sherry Dieterling, here in Portland.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, Gwen.
And Gwen Callahan, thanks for swinging by today. The website for the Portland Horror Film Festival, let viewers know about this.
It is portlandhorrorfilmfestival.com. Or you can go to portlandhorror.com. Both will work. And I just wanted to add one quick last thing that, like, the films that you're going to see next week are completely international. We have films from all over the world. There's one from a woman filmmaker in Iran. There's one from a guy in Egypt. There's one from a female director in Taiwan. So the span and, like, just the diversity and international flavor of this festival is really exciting for us. And a lot of these films are things that you're not going to be able to see anywhere else.
Wow. Thank you so much for coming in. And now we're going to bring you the film calendar of events that's coming up. Let's see. This evening, Thursday, May 26th, Mississippi Records Music and Film Series continues with a 7:30 p.m. screening of True Stories on 35mm. The 1986 film, directed by and starring David Byrne of the Talking Heads, is a bizarre and funny look at a small Texas town in the 80s. Featuring a short music set by S.K. Kakraba before the film, more info at hollywoodtheater.org. On Monday, May 30th, the Portland, Oregon Women's Film Festival continues their ongoing series POW Monthly with a showcase of youth-made short works at 7 p.m., featuring narrative, documentary, experimental, and comedy, drama, horror, and the premiere of the two newest films made by students of the POW Girls filmmaking program. More info at powfest.com or cstpdx.com. On June 2nd and 9th, Multnomah County Library branches will screen Heroes Magnificos, a collection of work by Latino youth filmmakers. Their short documentaries about the everyday heroes in their lives are the products of a spring break filmmaking program at St. John's and Rockwood Libraries, done in partnership with the Northwest Film Center and Milagro Theater. Their work will screen at the St. John's Library on the 2nd and at the Rockwood Library at the 9th, both at 6:30 p.m. More info at nwfilm.org. On June 7th, the filmmaking program Outside the Frame will present a gala screening of The Lost Boys of Portlandia at 6:30 p.m. at Revolution Hall. Outside the Frame provides film training and production opportunities for homeless youth, and The Lost Boys of Portlandia, their new documentary, explores the experiences of youth homelessness while riffing on the stories of Peter Pan, also featuring student-made shorts on topics like drug abuse, gender identity, and health care. On June 9th, KBOO's own film series at the Clinton Street Theater continues with a 7 p.m. screening of Pinkwashing Exposed. The Pacific Northwest-made documentary explores pinkwashing, a term for when countries engaged in human rights violations rebrand themselves as gay-friendly, with a focus on the pro-Israel Rainbow Generations tour in Seattle. The screening is presented by the KBOO Show's Preference and One Land Many Voices. More info at our site, kboo.fm. Well, wanted to thank our guests today very much, Will Kaufman, Jennifer Arndt, Gwen Callahan, and Josh Leek, as always. Thanks always to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration, and thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show, as well as our extended interviews, will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And you can keep up with us on Twitter, at KBOO Film Show. I'm SW Conser. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.